Janet Teresa McGann. Silent listening. My daddy dreams in Spanish, my mom in Portuguese. When their tongues first met that night, they didn't speak. She's lovesick for a homeland. He's calmer when he roams the hills of Spain at night, trailing fingers through the vineyards, eating grapes all dripping dew, lingual as pearls of water in her lashes, catching sunlight when she blinks, turns back from window. Days are silent listening to Abuelita's bridal clock, two-step ticking. Every moment prior door is counted twice. Ma swipes a thousand circles on a single red-orange orb. Daydreaming rocky shorelines, ripened wheat in open fields. She doesn't see the clotheslines, but she feels his shadow when it shatters. He explodes across the threshold, sickles us into his arms, and plants his kisses, sweeping us away while crunching glass under his foot. They meet in labile darkness beyond the borders of their love, filling night with muffled phonemes, drifting sighs, and feathered coos, where they sift me down to slumber. And I dream in loving language, not his, not hers, but ours.
That's beautiful, Therese. Thank you. And then next we have Stanley Knott.
Thank you.
I'll be here about a year ago at this idea. We spent the last 12 months between inaction, procrastination, and lots of distraction. But I've managed to get about 20 of them done since. So just recap the idea of taking song titles from particular artists and creating a piece of writing from that. So this is from a band that one of my favourites, Suede. That's very short, you're delighted to know. When the rain falls quiet loud, a new generation feel electricity. And modern boys picnic by the motorway. They're so young, these lazy painted people, and the big time is only one hit to the body away. But black or blue, trash or cheap, every Monday morning comes, and the sounds of the street remind the wild ones that Saturday night may be the perfect day, but this Hollywood life makes beautiful ones pantomime horses.
Thank you, Stanley. And next, please welcome Mary O'Connor.
Thank you, Sue. This is called Playing God. I come upon a shape spread-eagled on the road at the foot of Richmond Hill. Comatose from drink, his stiff limbs twitching still, a run-down battery toy. Knowing at what speed a car can cut that bend, my head plays scary tapes. If he wants to die, do I have the right to move him from harm's way? The devil in my ear tells me a sobering truth, that fear will force my hand. I pound the nearest door, leave when the occupants drag him to his feet.
Thank you. Thank you, Mary. And next we have Claire O'Connell.
Hi, it's my first time reading. Basically, for just a brief introduction of the poem, is that in my head I envision hell as a frozen lake, and there are souls underneath the frozen lake. And there's this lady, and she's called the Keeper of Corome, and Corome in Latin means in the presence of. So they're underneath the ice, and she gives them fake hope when she walks around, so they think she might be free, my freedom, but she never does. And Nemo means nobody in Latin, that's in the poem too. So here it is, anyway, got that now. The Keeper of Corome, shallow tears of glass and ice, shivered by the peaceway, have a crumb, my dear. The cake of Mr. Never whispers at your ear. Phantom child of hidden words, they grab you for the kill. bakery of delight, she will always wait. With a robe of darkness, she smiles at her heart content, taking the innocent silk robe, dismantling the simple things. The lion strokes of ice and cold, trapped till Nemo changes course, nothing more can be said, words of the unheard. Walking past the final walk, I bow to temptress will roll. She wants a tea and smoke, and says she stays as the keeper of Corom. Corom is such a damned lake, is where people come to die. Instead, they live forever beneath the devil's stormy sky.
Thank you, Claire. And next we have Rosalind Blue.
I don't know if I've done this before here. Metal. After we invented the wheel, we learned how to melt the metals from the rock, and the gold rush began as we dug and drained all the gleaming precious treasures from the veins of the earth, forging jewels, coins, and wealth, hoarding them like magpies. Red hot like liquid fire flowing, a crimson burning river glowing, molten copper, iron, silver, slither smoothly through the grooves, pouring into casting cauldrons, shooting into foundry molds, smouldering, steaming, zosh, the steaming gold is cast to foam. We made tools from the new metals, and axes for slaughtering trees, and arrowheads for felling animals. We made ploughs to sow the seeds and blades to cut the deeds and steal the riches from the land and rightful owners, and we cast our wildest dreams into reality. Then we made dooming cannonballs to cast on human enemies and iron bars to capture freedom. Our bullets pierced through history, reeling round the golden throne. Our battle titans scrape the skies, and we've made drills to bore the very bedrock of our waters. Now hard and cold our steel towns gleam in the sunlight like blue ice. The shimmering promise of gold holds the core to precious pride. But the price of power was high, and now the golden calf is sold, and our hearts like bloody swords from wealth and greed are growing cold. Beyond compare we hoard and kill like magpies, merciless as steel, and the glowing stream of gold from liquid fire freezes cold. And our hearts become the stone that once we dug out of the ground from the gleaming veins of earth, blinded by the promise of its core.
Thank you. And next we have Charles Clark.
We learnt that riverbeds have sharp stones. They are metal roadway and boundary. Stepping stones adjacent to a pool are now forged for tractor traffic. Our landscape of towers and churches, belfries, bells of summons and warnings. The bankhouse, our home for 6 years, leaning against a bridge polished by launders, have inspired verses. Inscribed verses for an English statesman, an absentee whose name is not forgotten. Egmont and Cressidum are not erased. River banks with lavish growths of hogweed, high-hedge fields, blackberries and cattle are found below the town where rivers join, Alum and Aura, giving depth and speed, rich alluvial soil and floodwaters before the big river exacts its tribute. The famous waters are appropriated. I heard my waters, an invitation to fish, but those are adult forces.
Thank you, Craig. And next we have Rob Orvard.
A sting in the tail. Calchas stared at his hands, willing them to start shaking, but nothing. Only stone of thoughts, tripping, daisy chain making. He rose and turned, wide wall open grinning, face front onto hackles risen, saliva dripping, V-twin Harley snarling, guard dog. Spin, quick turn and technique, crack, whimper, dead dog at his feet. Rubber-soled, near-silent glide, night watch person step aside and he'd arrived. Lock pick, snip, click, inside, turn left, then right, upstairs, in here, safe, draw breath. Crack, out move light, into night, drain pipe flight, swagged bag, gold jewels and secrets, offshore banking details, with evidence of fraud entailed. Main street, side street, off street, indoor, shut door, and secure, shoes off, feet soft, the lure of the looker. Sovereign, Kruger Rand, Ruby Diamond Pearl, hard drive, Rolodex, top secret file. Blackmail, hate mail, pawn shop, fence off, cash in, a kilogram of heroin, average day for an ex-special forces junkie like.
Thanks, Rob. And Michael Ray, it's been a while.
Birkenau. He remembers Daddy going to work, dressed in his grey uniform, with silver buttons and black leather boots, whistling a marching tune. He remembers playing with wooden toys made by unseen neighbours, the black iron gate and the garden wall, and eating ash-covered strawberries.
Thank you, Michael. And we have Eileen next. Eileen is not here anymore, I think, is she?
Yes.
Oh, she is, sorry.
This is a precious moment. Looking out of the window, unable to see the sunlight, disconnected from beauty all around, light streaming from the outside. Unable to reach your heart and soul, darkened by choice, misery blocking miracles, yet you're surrounded by them. You're a living miracle. You have the great, great gift of life. Celebrating it opens the window of your soul, allowing you to always adjust your sails, giving you a new focus and your life a new meaning. Looking at a glass full instead of half empty, cherishing the present moment and embracing that very moment. Doing this with a grateful heart will give you many, many moments. Life is sacred and it is a precious moment. Even when it is raining, the sun will shine love on your heart.
Thank you, Eileen. Lisa gave a wonderful reading here tonight, but we have one disappointed listener who didn't hear his favourite poem. So Ross Taylor would read one poem from Eileen's collection.
Yay. Yay.
I've been to hundreds of her readings, and I've gotten used to an awful lot of them, but this is the one I like best. But I think this is, ends with the best line she's ever written. It's called Mouse. A tail, the tail protrudes from the wheel well of my Toyota, I think it is a twig until its utter pinkness, matted fur dark with blood. I've been unconsciously spinning away life. I pretend I'm not part of this drama. I was only doing 30. Mm-hmm. Vital world, lives catch under wheels. I have to stop this rushing, these continuous murders.
Thank you, Ross. That's a good choice. And last but not least, we have Christy Parker.
I think it's time for the Lord to stand up a little bit. I've been writing this thing on and off for several years now. More years than I care to remember. It's kind of long, so I'm going to leave out a couple of the verses because we'll be here all night. But in any case, it's a bit of my point. It's a true story. It's called A Horse's Dream. I've never seen a raised horse put its money on a man, but last night I had a dream, and this is how it ran. 100 humans in a paddock, all different shapes and kinds, had reins and nosebands on their fronts and flies on their behinds. And as they circled round and round, some folk were seen to sweat, while horses studied how they looked and trotted off to bed. And as these humans went to post in nervous trepidation, the equines in the stands rubbed hooves in eager expectation. They cantered down a frisky bunch with heads up in the air, though some took lifts from strangers and some caught taxis there. A rock star went berserk on route and flipped head over ass. He snorted, "I can't help it, man, I get like this on the grass." Activity was frantic amongst the gambling hordes. Late money for an actor had him wiped clean off the boards. But late into the market to lift a bob or two, a shopkeeper came in steaming, hoping up at 5 to 2. The top weight, a backbench TD, was also much selected. His horseplay had been unsurpassed since he had been elected. Others swore the parish priest would prove the better stare, and knowing how to hug the rails, he'd answer every prayer. A well-bred civil servant was short odds with a run, but veered away towards the pub at just on 5 to 1. The going dry was reason why the sailor stayed well out, but drifting in a fisherman and a headstrong lager lout. Then a hold-up at the stalls as a waiter spread a plate, and a woman in a wedding dress arrived 10 minutes late. The blindfolds were in order for a justice of the peace, while a jockey, frail and very bent, was let in by police. A painter went in easily, but a man who drove a bus refused to budge another inch unless he got paid first. A fisherman was hauled inside, but a porter was too stout, and a bet was accidentally scratched and a dentist too pulled out. Stretched from the start, the fugitive took up an early lead, but behind him came a cameraman with impressive shutter speed. A barber tried a shorter cut and a tailor followed suit, whilst the tourist knelt down with a map to find the scenic route. Then an arsonist shot forward to set the field alight, but a farmer, sensing danger, kept him in his sight. And whether out behind the trees or whether well in sight, the men slowed down each time they passed the lady of the night. A working man, true to his plan, broke from his pace of leisure, but from the rear, like every year, the taxman had his measure. For half a mile, without much style, they ran about the track, each mindful that success could mean a knife stuck in their back. A down and out without a shout broke through with expectation, but soon was checked by a council clerk who took out his legislation. In a junky lassie's patient with the runners in the lead, and turning to the front, he injected extra speed. An astrologer looked up and said, "I see I'm going to lose," and a cobbler said he couldn't last because he'd lost his shoes. A traffic warden crossed a drunk who, as he served and fell, brought down a fancy DJ and his hairdresser as well. The masochist pulled up in pain, but the sailors got the trip. The boat appalled the stewards with their usage of their whip. An undertaker lured the ground but lost his chance to win, when a doctor and his next of kin combined to box him in. 2 furlongs out, a friend to shout, "Foul play was being done!" A blinkered guard had pricked his ears and arrested all, bar one. That one man skipped with bags in hand towards the winning line, down the straight with Bedford Gate, he won while scarcely trying. Regardless of their speed, his breed will triumph for their sins, but as every man and horse knows well, the bookie always wins. I interviewed the winner as he did his best to pose, with 20 horses reaching out to pat him on the nose. And as he talked into the mic, I shoved into his face, we shook our horsey heads and laughed at the crazy human race. Thank you.